right, I call to order this meeting of the Joint Development Real Estate Committee. We have the agenda before us. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as published?
Mr. Chairman.
It's been moved. Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. Is there discussion on the agenda? Ms. Hewlett?
Yes, I would propose that we move action item D, 3D, the MOU with Maryland DOT for the New Carrollton Metro Rail Station.
Is it your motion to postpone or table or what is it?
Just table it for maybe 1 month or so.
Okay.
For a month.
So the next meeting, yeah.
Okay, it's been moved to table item 3D, Roman numeral 3D, until the next regularly scheduled meeting of this committee. Is there discussion on the motion? Discussion, hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And item Roman numeral 3D is postponed until our next meeting.
Assuming there's adoption of the agenda.
Assuming. Did you want to do this?
I'm just asking.
No. Yes, that would be correct.
So don't we have to act on it?
We're not done yet. We just amended the motion.
Okay.
So is there further discussion on the motion to approve the agenda? Further discussion. Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Now we proceed to approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as if read?
So moved.
Been moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. We proceed now to our action items, Roman numeral 3A, easement assignment to Poplar Point 1 North. Mr. Bodegeimer.
Thank you very much. Mr. Golden will give this in the subsequent presentations.
Thank you. At the time Anacostia Metro Rail Station was constructed, Metro acquired an easement for access to Howard Road for a future surface parking facility. The parking garage was subsequently built, but the additional surface parking was determined to be unnecessary. We're now faced with an opportunity. GSA is looking for office space for DHS, looking to acquire or accommodate approximately 1 million square feet. We were approached by Poplar Point 1 North LLC. They have property near the Anacostia Station that meets the requirements, but that property is encumbered by a Metro easement. And this action would assign our easement to Poplar Point North to allow them to compete to provide office space for the GSA. The staff appraisal was a range of $350,000 to $450,000, and we assigned an easement value of $400,000. And we're asking for board approval today for that item.
Is there a motion to approve, Mr. Giancola? Mr. Giancola moves to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mr. Downey. Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor, Mr. Linton.
Yes. What does the easement relate? How does that relate to access to our station and with the prospect of this new property or office space being built?
If we look at the diagram, the overhead aerial, that one there, yes. Our station is to the right of the easement.
Mm-hmm.
We actually never acquired the property off of Howard Road behind the easement. That's where we were going to build a surface lot. So we have no property holdings over where that easement is located.
Does it do anything for access to our station?
No. We screen this property like we screen all the properties and for all the departments.
The access from the park garage to the Anacostia station goes under the freeway and there's a tunnel that goes under directly from the garage underneath it, but there's we have no facilities between the garage and the Anacostia River, which is that direction.
How would this assist those who are going to be at DHS and their access to our metro station? Is there a walkway? How would they get to?
The way to get to our station would be to walk along Howard Road to our parking garage and then to go in, take the underground pedestrian passageway that connects from the garage into our station. That's the most direct route. I assume that this would be an issue for the District Department of Transportation and District Department of Planning in the approvals phase if any facility was awarded there and designed to be built there.
Because because I think, you know, I mean, I would just hope that we are mindful that, you know, this becomes additional riders and access. It's part of our desire to keep people using public transportation, particularly at these federal facilities. So I just hope that would be in everybody's mind as they move forward.
Question.
Mr. Downey.
In GSA's solicitation, will they have an access to Metro requirement?
Don't know the answer to that.
Distance, at least the distance requirement that they've had in the past.
I don't think we know the answer to that. I mean, really, we're facilitating somebody else's application, right. But we haven't. We're not
without supporting one application over another, I think it's in our interest to have GSA make that requirement in all their solicitations.
We are actively working on that.
Further discussion? Yes, Mr. Benjamin.
I just had a question. On the funding impact, we say that this money will be deposited into the capital budget. When does money go into the capital budget, and when does it go into the TIF?
It goes into the capital budget if it comes from the proceeds of a piece of excess property. It goes into the TIF if it's a joint development project. And if it's a new joint development project. There are joint development projects that were concluded up until 2000, and the proceeds from those go into the operating budget. But those that are finalized after 2000 go into the TIF.
Except for the rental, the lease payments, which go to operating, right? No,
the lease payments, go into the TIF as well.
Okay. And why would this not also go into the TIF?
It's a surplus property. It's not really joint development.
But that's the question I have is, given that we apparently changed the rules and everything now was going to the TIF, why did we not include this?
That allows it for joint development, but not for sale?
Well, it determines what happens when a property is in place.
Could we, in this particular case, if it's going to the capital program, use this to offset the use of preventive maintenance funds this year?
There's no restriction, as far as I'm aware, on where in the capital program now.
It seems as though that's the direction that we ought to be going as quickly as possible, is to relieve those preventive maintenance funds. So if there is no objection to by the committee, I would like to amend this to have the funds be used to offset the use of preventive maintenance.
Well, I think we let me just say, I think we need to consult what our policies are before we would consider that. So,
well, that we were just told that policy is okay. It's the other one that we could change if we wish. We can, and we were told that one, we run into a federal law.
Question.
Let me see if we can get a definitive response from our counsel.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
The question that is before us is whether or not we can commit these particular funds. I guess it's $450,000. $400,000 to reduce the transfer to support preventative maintenance. Is that permissible under our joint development and surplus policy, surplus property policies?
It's not addressed by the policy.
I can't hear you.
It's not addressed by our current policy.
So then we are free to act. Thank you. Okay, then there's been a motion made to amend the action item to commit these funds as described. Is there discussion on?
Do you need a second? I'm second.
Yeah, and seconded by Mrs. Okay. Hudson. Is there further discussion on the amendment, Mr. Downey?
On the amendment, it doesn't seem to me that this actually reduces the allocation for preventive maintenance, because you're taking a new source of capital, adding it to the capital program, conceptually using that to pay for some of the preventive maintenance, but not to reduce it.
I guess the you're right. I mean, it's one or the other,
yeah.
Or it's anyone. But what we're doing is we are offsetting
offsetting
part of the use of preventive maintenance by allowing more capital to occur. All we're doing is noting the fact that that's what we're doing.
Of this capital windfall.
Right.
Further discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment is carried. We now are on the action item itself. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The easement assignment to Poplar Point North, Poplar Point 1 North, is adopted and recommended. Our second action item is the sale of excess metro properties. Mr. Bodenkeimer.
Mr. Golden will make this presentation.
Again, these two properties have been screened and subject to retention of easements for any existing metro facilities. And, of course, the jurisdictions in which these are located will have first chance to purchase them at appraised fair market value. If there is no jurisdictional interest, then there will be a public sale through a competitive process. We anticipate total proceeds of approximately $1 million. The monies will be deposited into the capital budget. The first property is at Capital Gateway Drive. This is near the Branch Avenue Metro Station, a little less than 1 acre. And the second property is at 2921 Sayre Road. This is a single-family home, which is about a half acre site.
So, Mr. Golden, the process here is that they would be first offered to the local jurisdictions at fair market value, am I right?
Appraised fair market value, yes.
Pardon me?
Appraised fair market value.
And do we have the appraised for fair market value at this time?
No, we would do that. Actually, we have an order of magnitude estimates, but we didn't want to put down individual numbers in a public forum.
Right, understood. And then in the event that the jurisdictions are not interested in these purchases, they would then be competitively bid?
Correct.
Okay. Is there discussion? Mr. Linton?
This is part of our initiative to monitorize excess property that we have in our stock, in essence.
That's correct.
And we think now would be the time in order to do that. Is this the best time in the real estate market for us to sell off excess properties?
Well, what we're asking for today is board authorization to begin the process. We're looking to do this sometime before our fiscal year ends, June 30th of 2011, and we would use our judgment as to whether the time was right to do that. But we want to get underway with the appraisals and the process and the jurisdictional opportunities.
Yeah, I was just raising the question because it seems to me right now it's kind of buyer's market, and sellers are not necessarily at the best advantage. And the question is whether or not the need for the revenues is such that we need to sell it off now, or whether that is more beneficial for us to do it when there's a return. And we're all hopeful that there will be a return. So that was just a question that I asked.
Further discussion?
A question.
Mr. Downing.
Sure. Just curiosity, how did we wind up owning a single family home in Vienna?
It's the only one I understand in our inventory. When we got approvals, I guess, for the station over there, the metro facility, this was part of that. And just recently, the zoning was changed so that we can actually sell the property on a standalone basis. Prior, it was zoned for transit use, and had we sold it, the new owner would not have been able to use it.
And once sold, this property will go back on the tax rolls, right?
Correct.
Question.
Mr. McKay?
Obviously, in this corridor area, there's quite a bit of rail work planned in the future, and I'm wondering if, going back to Mr. Linton's question, I'd sure like to see justification if we move forward selling this property that shows that we don't expect it to increase in value tremendously with increased access to public transportation in this corridor. And I'd hate for us to be making investments in rail expansions and find out, you know, after those expansions go in place, that this particular property experienced a huge increase in value after that. So we want to be conscious not only of the market we're in, but also some of the improvements that this, you know, very agency is making in areas and making a determination that we ought to sell it. So if you could keep that in mind, I'd appreciate it.
When we screen properties, we not only screen them through all the user groups here at Metro, but we sit down with our TOD staff, we look at them from exactly the standpoint you're talking about, and we make an evaluation as to, you know, what is the likelihood for appreciation outside of just normal market forces due to exactly the things you're talking about. And it was determined that the size of this property and the configuration of it, that amount would be minimal.
Mr. Benjamin?
Let me follow up on that last discussion. if you would go back a slide, please, to Branch Avenue. Now, that piece, that one, yeah. That piece is about an acre, and it looks like the adjoining properties are pretty much available. It's directly across from our parking lot, very close to the station. And I guess the question I have looking at that is, why would we be selling that off as opposed to holding it for future joint development and doing transit-oriented development on that location?
When we do joint development on the Branch Avenue site, the developers that are looking at projects of that scale are going to be, if you can go back one slide, they're going to be looking at the parking lots, the major areas there. They're not going to have any interest in a single half-acre plus single one-acre out parcel.
I understand the lot by itself probably is not very valuable, but all around it is land that can be aggregated with it. And we seem to be going out of our way to get rid of a piece of property that could be a major development. And you're saying that being across the street from the parking lot is enough to cause nobody to be interested?
Well, it's certainly not going to be of interest to the developers that would respond to an RFP for the large area that you see there. It may be of interest to an individual developer, you know, small developer. If it's something that you want us to pull, we'll pull it.
My reaction is I don't want to substitute my judgment for people in Prince George's County, but my reaction is if you try to replace our parking, that's an expensive thing to do in a development. Here we are right across the street. You're a block away from a metro station, and we're getting rid of a piece of property that I think would be good for joint development.
The problem is we have a limited amount of staff, and we try to assign those staff to the largest parcels where we can realize the highest return. We just don't have the staff to go and do all these small half-acre, one-acre parcels. And that was part of the reasoning for doing the disposition.
We want to get rid of property because we don't have the staff to do transit-oriented development properly?
We don't have the staff to do every single parcel that we have, and we need to focus on the major parcels. And if we want to realize the revenue from this now, one of the ways to do it is to dispose of it.
I guess my reaction is I'd rather realize the revenue in the future and use it for joint development than try and get some money today because we don't have the staff to develop it today. We exist over a longer period of time.
Ms. Hutchinson?
I hope there's another part that we're also thinking about in this. It's not only what we will do, will we enable someone else to utilize the site better? Putting it on the tax roll, which also brings use to the station. The question is, who will see the best value for this in the long run? We could all say that we could bring it into the Metro property, and it would be part of a long-term joint development for Metro. But the other question I would have if I were looking locally is to say, how do I put that on the tax roll, generate revenue, and also, if there's someone else's consolidation, it's a consolidation on theirs. It's a question of where the value is going to come to me directly and when. And I'm not sure. I'm not ready to judge that right now. What we're saying today is that we're putting this out as an option first to the jurisdictions and then for us. And then the last part of that for us is that you will come back to us with what you have in terms of the value of that property if we decide to sell.
Once we do this, they never come back to us.
We can.
Well, I think they should because I think that gives us the question of what we've raised about the value, but I think what you're trying to do is determine whether or not we should get rid of this asset and to where would it best serve us.
Would you come back to us also with a proposal from the jurisdiction?
Yes.
So in both cases, we would see this again.
Correct.
Ms. Hewlett?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this I wrestled with this myself when I did talk with Mr. Bodekheimer on this because I had the same concerns that were raised by Mr. Benjamin. After talking with them and realizing that it's a one-acre, slightly less than one-acre parcel, and that it would not be included in joint development or transit-oriented development project. It's just too far away, and it's just the one little parcel. I think that when he explained that it's just going to be an option, that they would look at it and get the fair market appraised fair market value, and then look at it and make an assessment as to whether it's worth it or not. That it doesn't necessarily mean that they would go ahead, and now that they have also indicated that they would come back to the board, I feel a level of comfort in having options. So I don't mind, I don't have an issue, and I know they've spoken with other folks in Prince George's County. I don't think they have, I don't have an issue with them looking at this as long as they come back to us.
Is that then a formal part of our motion?
Without objection, we will incorporate into the motion the concept, the requirement, rather, that any offer on this property, whether it be from the jurisdiction or from any private entity, would require the approval of this board.
And
Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Zimmerman?
Well, I think that's fine, but I also think we want to make sure that when it comes back, it doesn't just get in one of these things that we sort of forget the conversation we just had. So I would like us to direct staff to come back actually with, you know, affirmative statement and with some analysis, something that addresses this issue. That's the very question that Mr. Benjamin, for instance, was asking about this particular piece of property, that Kay raised the other one, that says, you know, have we considered what its potential role is in the future and its value in light of these other things, and raise again the issue? And if you can make the case that, as Ms. Hudgens says, well, this facilitates something that's actually better now and all that, okay, that's fine. But if it doesn't, then maybe it's imprudent to be selling off a piece of property now for relatively small one-time cash, you know, and we ought to think twice about it.
The recommendation says offer, didn't say sell.
And my point is just that's fine, but sometimes these things come back and nobody remembers the context in which we had this conversation. It's just, okay, we're selling excess property. And I hate for this conversation to have been wasted. So I think staff needs to be directed there to bring it back in that context and answer that question and any recommendation they may make to sell.
Okay. So without objection, that will also be incorporated into the motion. Is there further discussion on the motion? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. That action item is recommended by the committee. We now move to award licenses for retail in metro stations.
This final item, we issued a request for proposal for the operation of retail concessions in October of 2009. We received 6 responses in December. Our staff, operational staff, visited over 30 sites to determine if utilities were available and to make sure pedestrian flow would not be negatively impacted. Then a proposal evaluation team reviewed the proposals, looking at the financial capability of the proposers. The companies themselves subsequently hired electrical contractors to review the sites and assess installation costs. We evaluated these proposals based on revenue to Metro, creativity of the concepts, experience and financial capability of the proposers, small and local business participation and completeness of their operation plan. And the proposals that meet those criteria came from NCR Blockbuster and Movie Solutions, both for placement of DVD rental machines, and from Old Town Trolley Tours for placement of ticket sales information booths at the Smithsonian. And so these proposals combined will generate an estimated $928,000 of revenue over their 8-year license term. The licensees pay all the cleaning costs, maintenance, utility costs, no additional security requirements as determined by MTPD. And we have the right to renegotiate the license fees after the first year based on gross revenues. And any questions?
Well, Mr. Golden, I appreciate very much the fact that we appear to be moving forward on this relatively new concept for Metro, which is to bring concessions into the stations. But speaking as one board member who has been involved in this from the outset, as you know from our discussions, I'm a little bit disappointed that the original concept of small business enterprise being given this opportunity, being encouraged to have this opportunity, it has somehow or another not been realized. And as you have informed me, and I do appreciate this information from you, is that the application itself was daunting, to say the least. There were 70 pages, if I remember correctly, of Metro boilerplate that was attached to the application. So anyone who had a small business enterprise would look at that, or I would be likely to look at that and say, oh my God, how could I ever begin to deal with this to set up a florist shop or a news booth or whatever. The other, of course, the amount of money also that we're generating is not very great either. And so we've spent, I don't know how many years we've spent on this.
No, I think so.
I'm looking to Mr. Zimmerman because he has been a compadre on this issue. So I don't know. I was hoping that we could have more small business enterprises. I was hoping this would generate more funds. But I would be more willing to accept a smaller amount of revenue if there was a greater amount of good in terms of the small business enterprises. I'm not saying that we should dump this by any means, but I'm saying that that's when we started all of this, that was a vision that was had for this. Mr. Linton?
I would suggest that we don't lose the vision and that we start with this, because this may in fact give others desire and interest in putting their businesses there, and we can learn from the process so the next time around it's not as daunting for those that apply. But, you know, this provides some momentum because what we've had before is we've gone out for this several times with nothing to come back with. So at least we get started, provide some momentum, and then we improve the next time we go out.
Mr. McKay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with the sentiments of Mr. Linton. I think we have to start. This looks like a fair starting place and a fair test. The disappointment that I have is, and I made this clear when we went out with solicitations, is that we give a lot of thought to providing services at stations that otherwise have none. Some of our end-of-the-line stations that have not benefited from transit-oriented development, that do not have businesses at the doorsteps of the stations that people can utilize. And, you know, frankly, when I look at the list, these are all very busy stations. Many of them are surrounded by a number of private sector amenities and services within arm's reach. And, of course, we have a lot of stations that don't benefit from that, that I would think, you know, from a ridership standpoint and convenience to our customers standpoint, we would want to facilitate establishments in those stations. And I don't see those predominantly end-of-the-line stations with an interest. And I don't know necessarily if that's a sole market reaction, if it's a reaction to the complexity issues of bidding, if it's a reaction to perceived local zoning concerns, or what the reason would be for not having that. But I don't remember the exact language, but I thought we were going to try to encourage responses that would look at those types of situations, and I don't see that in this first round of responses. So at a minimum, you know, I'd like to get a staff reaction as to why we think that happened. And secondly, certainly when we go around and look at expanding this program, should we do that, maybe we need to be a little bit more direct in making sure that some of those stations also get served. And they may not be the most opportunistic, but as a part of a package, if you pick up those stations with some of these vendors, they might be more willing to do it if they're getting more stations. So I'd like to at least get a reaction as to why we think those locations weren't in the first response.
Exactly the reason that you indicated. It was a market response, and that they looked at all these stations as opportunities. They looked at the foot traffic and what the prospective revenue was relative to the installation costs, and the market decided which stations they wanted to be at.
If I could add to that and address some of the other points about the small businesses making opportunities available, I think a key consideration here is the administrative burden of managing lots and lots of one-off relationships with individual vendors, which is an administrative burden for us, and it's difficult for each individual vendor. And what I think a concept that we may want to revisit as a way of making more opportunities available to small businesses and as a way of making it easier to experiment with services that are tailored to end-of-the-line locations is to look again at the master licensor concept, creating one entity that gets some familiarity with Metro's processes and then can develop its own very simple contracts with retailers who can then experiment with locations and with a minimum of administrative burden, both to vendors, whether they want to sell umbrellas, whether they want to sell something else that's tailored to an end-of-the-line location, give it a shot for 3 or 6 months. If it doesn't work, it's a minimum of burden to the vendor, it's a minimum of burden to us, and it's within the scope of the master licensor's sort of familiarity with the system, and they know how to handle that.
Well,
so
I think we should look at that, but I also think we ought to remind ourselves that, as the chair of this committee pointed out, the monetary benefit is not that great. And we shouldn't be driving this whole process by the monetary benefit. Our role in this also is to make sure we provide additional services and amenities to our passengers. It's gravy, and we're lucky that there's a monetary benefit out of it, but we're not providing services at stations that don't have services today, which we need to be conscious of that piece of this whole solicitation as well.
I'm sorry, if my comment was suggested that we were motivated more by a financial consideration than
I'm just saying we need to remind ourselves and make sure that when we're looking at future rounds of this, that we're not just looking at whether we can make money off of these locations, but also what the relative service improvement is to the customers at some of the other stations.
The benefit of the customer has definitely been foremost in our minds, and the creating a framework in which it's possible for, I guess, a little bit more effervescence, experimentation, whatever it is you want, providing services in stations that don't have the traffic of the more guaranteed pedestrian traffic locations is a framework we would like to put in place to get in place just exactly the kind of customer benefits you're describing.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's see. We have on a first round, if you don't mind, and we had Mayor Yule and Mr. Zimmerman and Mr. Solomon, Mrs. Hudson. Mr. Downey, is that okay? Well, everyone will have the opportunity to speak, of course.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think my question has been answered piggyback on Mr. McKay's question relative to the response or the lack of response, particularly for both Fairfax and Alexandria. I'm assuming that there was significant outreach to try to solicit interested vendors, but that's just a can out.
Yes, there was very significant outreach, and I think that just important, if I may, to point out again, to emphasize what Mr. Bodekheimer said, if you're that little person who has the hot dog cart outside our building here, and a 70-page RFP lands on your hot dog stand, you're not going to know what to do with it. But on the other hand, if you're a master licensor who deals with these things with transit agencies around the country, and you approach that hot dog vendor and say, how would you like to have this opportunity? We sign a 2-page agreement. That's very doable, and that would really enable small businesses to have an opportunity to come in here. And I think the flexibility is important too, because we all want to see what's going to work, what's going to provide a service to our customers that they want. I like the idea of maybe tying a master licensor into having to service some of the end of the line stations. You can't expect, you know, one little vendor to take on that responsibility.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman.
I'm going to support this because, as Mr. Graham indicated earlier, we've been forward, and I'm really pleased to see that, and I hope it will lead to something better. Hopefully more opportunities, both for services for our customers and for some business opportunities for local people. But I think Mr. McKay's comment was really important, that, you know, if this turns out to make money for us, great, but I've never saw it as a likely significant source of revenue. I do see this as a significant source of benefit to passengers, and, you know, the main business we're in, if it's selling anything, selling rides on transit, so something that makes it more likely for people to use transit is a good thing. You know, I'm struck by the limitations on what we have, and I do think we've managed to make the process as complicated as possible, because that seems to be the way we do things here. You can't, you know, just have artists show up and sing. We have to have a whole process for recruiting them and screening them, and, you know, and that showed up here too. Perhaps at some point we should try the master, lesser, or whatever you called it, approach to give these opportunities. I have to say I'm a little skeptical about that, because what I envision is one person gets a great big contract, they become the czar, they own the thing, and the next thing we know, we're hearing from people about their difficulties with that person or entity. We're hearing about how they play favorites, we're hearing about how they're getting kicked back, or whatever it is, all the stuff that always happens when you delegate that something. I'm not sure why you wouldn't do that in-house, but, you know, we're not there yet. So for the moment, at least this is getting some retail out there, and some people can see some services. I find it, I mean, I tell you, when I was pushing this home, Mr. Graham and a couple others some years ago, I remember walking in here with a thing about new service for DVD boxes, you know, being sold, and which we've subsequently seen appear in grocery stores and other things. And I, for several years, said, gee, they're all over there now. Couldn't you put one in this station? So here it is now. Right at the moment when that business seems to be going under. Blockbuster going to be in business 12 months from now? I don't know, but it sure looks to me like Netflix is going to own the world, right? Like Google. So, you know, someone else is spending money, and if people still want to pick up DVDs on their way home, great. But it does feel like that was yesterday's business. Ticket sales for the Old Town Trolley, that seems like a really obvious sort of thing, so that's great. And that's pretty much what we got, right?
Yes.
I was in the Thurgood Marshall Airport last week, and perhaps some of our people from that state will know better than I will. But I went by some other vending machines that sold an amazing variety of things, appliances, you know, little things that I'm trying to remember all the stuff that's in there. I was running
iPods.
By, but
mm-hmm.
What's that?
iPods.
Yeah, things yeah. like iPods, you know, electronic stuff. There are machines, you know, that are now selling that, you know, a wider variety of things, non-food and not necessarily DVD. And, you know, that made me wonder whether there's some opportunity there. I still think there are places where an actual human being could stand behind a table and sell things, mm-hmm. and that would be okay with me. But, you know, obviously not today. So, as I said, as this seems like it will at least move us forward, I'm willing to give it a try.
Now we had Mr. Solomon and then Mr. Downey and Ms. Hewlett.
Well, Mr. Linton.
Mr. Solomon.
Mr. Linton, second round. Second. Is there anybody else on first round?
Okay. Mr. Downey.
No, no, I know. I've got Mr. Solomon and Mr. Downey.
Mr. Solomon. Mr. Solomon.
I just have so many chairmen.
You share the first same name.
We have a committee of chairmen. Mr. Acosta.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a – well, I do support this effort, and I think we had a similar experience in Chicago where we actually looked at trying to revamp our concessions. We looked at master licensing. We also looked at a number of having a number of different master licensees trying to deal with it, so you're not stuck with one. But also I think bundling stations that have high demand and low demand to kind of encourage – one vendor or one license holder to pick up a couple of stations might also be a way to encourage some of these stations that don't have services to get them. But my question really deals with the Smithsonian station, the old trolley, Old Town Trolley. We're in the process right now of working with the Park Service and a number of different folks in terms of a replacement for the tourmobile, which may also be a low-cost transit options similar to the circulator. I just wanted to make sure that if they selected somebody who provided low-cost service, there would be an opportunity to, if they wanted to, have a stand or have some sort of sales at that station in addition to Old Town Trolley.
I don't have the answer for you right now because I don't know what the spacing is and the operational flow, but we can get that information to you.
Okay. It's just a matter of we're trying to encourage more transit use down there, and if we're able to put in a service, and if they wanted to market it somehow, it would be a good opportunity at the Smithsonian.
Mr. Downey?
I certainly support going forward with this and think it's very much in the interest of the customer for the overall experience. I also think the idea of looking towards master license agreements, recognizing issues that Mr. Zimmerman has raised, is still a good way to go in terms of simplifying the process for the vendor, giving them shorter term opportunities to come in, seasonal changes in terms of what the goods sold are. And in that regard, I wanted to ask, although it's somewhat different, about the one proposal that was eliminated, first one listed, representing a bunch of different things. Was that a single licensee?
Which page are you on?
I'm on page 2 of the memorandum. It said licensee representing Smithsonian Museum, Destination DC, et cetera, et cetera. Was that one licensee representing all of these?
Yes, that's correct. That was one individual who indicated.
Which are fairly complex as opposed to simple master license.
Correct.
Because I didn't think Smithsonian Museums had a lack of business experience, but then it says the licensee did.
It was one man.
Thank you.
Mr. Downey. Mr. Linton. Second round.
Thank you, sir. I think I Marcel Acosta Relayed my point. I've been very familiar with some things that the CTA has done most recently, and they have some fairly aggressive business development efforts. And some of that efforts includes having a single vendor that actually manages. They do it for real estate. They do it for business development, things of this nature. And they've had some degree of success. And it gives an entity who is much more intimately involved in that as their day-to-day business, the responsibilities for doing it, and it relieves CTA staff from the day-to-day management, but allows them to manage the overall project. So I think it's something we need to look at in several areas across our enterprise. I would suggest we take a look at
The firm you're referring to is Jones Lang LaSalle, and we've been in discussions with them, and we hope to be coming to you with some ideas along those lines this coming year.
Okay, further discussion? I just have a couple of concluding points. I understand, what is this, some of these questions are no longer as relevant as they might have been, because what we have here is all machines, right? We don't have any shops as such. But what is the rental? Are we doing this as a rental per square foot?
It's a combination of a base rent and then a percentage rent, and it varies by vendor.
It doesn't vary by square foot?
No, it's not. It's by the actual, there's a base rent for the machine location, and then there's a percentage rent, I believe, based on their actual revenues. I don't know that it's appropriate in public session to talk about individual proposals.
But there is a factor here of how much money they produce.
Yes.
And we get some factor of
correct. This. And so
the higher base rent and a lower percentage of sales, and some propose a lower base rent and a higher percentage of sales.
So there is flexibility there. We don't have a sense of design issues here because again it's machines.
Correct.
If we had shops, it'd be more of a design question.
That was part of the issue also in the RFP. When some of the respondents looked at some of the design criteria that we had for kiosks, that was also not conducive because of the costs associated there.
Have you had discussions with the DC Lottery?
We've just initiated those, yes.
So there's a possibility of them also having this opportunity?
Correct.
Yeah, this does not preclude further offerings for the system at all.
Okay. And finally, I think we do need to work on the application. I think we need a small business friendly application, and in your copious free time, if you could tackle that, because I say that facetiously. I know how busy your staff is, but I mean if we could come up with a, because we obviously have a great many stations available, and I think some of them have great prospects in terms of being attractive to enterprise. So. If we could work a bit on the application. Mrs. Hutchins?
I wasn't going to comment because much has been said, but when you raise that point, I think what we're looking for are services that people will find inviting in making the transit trip a little bit more convenient. And too often, these are the very small people that have not had a chance to have all of the business acumen. And I think under your description that you have and an experience that I've had with one type of, we called it an incubator, but in that space, one individual managed or took care of all that responsibility. And I think in doing that, you start to reach out. And I don't think it's the application piece as much as the rest of it that you have to do. Who does all of the financing or accounting for them? Those kinds of things gets pushed off on someone else, and it's managed to our agreement, and they sub it, and I think that will draw many more folks. I call them getting out of the basement or off the sidewalk type services that we could get a great deal of actual service to the customer out of it. So
I'll share an anecdote which I think reflects what you're talking about. There's a sandwich shop half a block up the street, and the gentleman there has a large counter that wasn't used. And about 2 months ago, someone started selling sushi at the counter. Well, after 2 weeks, the sushi didn't sell, so they were selling packaged sushi. And after 2 weeks, that didn't sell. And now a woman came in and is selling hats. And she's been so successful, she's now taken over the entire counter selling hats. And she's obviously working under subcontract to him, who's the landlord, the operator. And I think that kind of spirit where you can do something informally is what a master licensor scenario allows for. And if it's not responsive to the market, it allows for a quick change. The vendor doesn't want to be locked into a long-term lease and it's not working, and the master licensor doesn't want it. We don't have institutionally the flexibility to do that kind of thing. So I think the master licensor is the way we really need to go, and to the extent we can address the concerns raised by Mr. Zimmerman.
I like, though, very much the point that you've made about the incubator, though, because we, too, have incubator projects, and I think that's something we should look at.
Well, the equivalent in a shopping mall is the carts that you see. Those are really retail incubators for small business people.
All right, but further discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and this matter is recommended. I want to just, we have taken New Carlton off the agenda, but I do want to make a request in public session. I would like to, because this would have been a perhaps relevant issue for our discussion, I would like very much to have an analysis of Metro-Wilmata's approach to unsolicited proposals which are received on what were prior joint development solicitations. So if we receive an unsolicited proposal on something that has previously been the subject of such a solicitation, I'd like to know how we treat that under our existing policies. And we recently had a discussion about this, and I reminded everyone that we do have an existing policy on this. And I just want to get clarity on how we are using it and what may be issues relating to that policy. So I would like to ask, and of course this would very much involve Ms. O'Keefe as our counsel, but I would like to have something like this for such an analysis for our next meeting. Is that possible?
Yes. I'd just like to clarify, you said existing joint development guidelines, existing policies. We had a solicitation from New Carrollton from 2004, which was under
I don't want to go back. Into the discussion.
Okay.
I just want a general, an analysis of our existing policies and how they would apply to a hypothetical situation or whatever, and what would be the issues there. So is there further business before the committee? And please note that the subsequent agendas are before you, and our next meeting is not until September. Well, how do we bring
our next meeting is July. It will be July because of the deferral of the New Carroll item.
Oh,
next
so we've changed this already. When is our next meeting?
July
22nd.
Or 2 weeks after that. July 22nd.
Well, let me just see here because, you see, this is a new development. When would it be? The 22nd?
Thursday, yeah. July 22nd.
Okay, so we would add, we have on that date a WMATA board executive session and a board meeting. So we would meet at 9 o'clock. Is that right? Someone needs to say something.
Yes.
We have an executive session, you know that we have.
Well, that's what I have on my calendar.
I don't think we have one scheduled yet.
All right, so but whether we have one or not, we're going to do real estate at 9 p.m. Is that correct?
9 a.m.
You can do it, Peter.
Well, can Mr. Solomon correct me on this? you can see where my mind is. All right, so we have our real estate committee at 9 a.m. on July 22nd. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, there being no further business before the committee, we stand in adjournment.